What's up, fam? From Futuro Media and PRX, it's In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Jamila King, and this is ITT Sound Off.
What's up, Jamila?
Hey, Maria. So good to be here again.
It's been a while, girl. It's been a while.
I know you've been on the road, so I finally got you.
Dude, and you know I totally fell for your April Fool's joke. You know, I was like, wait, she's moving to Santa Barbara and has a home with a pool. Anyway, that's a separate conversation.
My best yet. I'm very proud of that.
I fell for her April's Fool hard. All right, listen, we're going to get to our first topic, which it's kind of like April Fool's, actually. It's a little bit like, what the hell is going on? We are talking about COVID and the latest news. So on Monday, y'all know this. A Trump-appointed Florida federal judge, Catherine Kimball Mizell, struck down the federal mask mandate for airplanes and other modes of public transportation. By the way, you should look up what people have said, like legal experts, about Catherine Kimball Mizell in terms of her qualifications to be a federal judge. Anyway, her 59-page ruling said that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, had exceeded their authority, but legal experts have actually criticized her legal reasoning on this point. The thing is that as soon as the news broke, we've all seen it, there were posts on social media and of airline passengers hearing mid-flight announcements that masks were no longer required. And then there was, like, you know, the flight attendants walking through the aisles with their little garbage bags, collecting the masks as people were taking them off and putting them in the bag in mid-flight or just as they landed. Immediately, several major airlines, including Delta, American, United, Southwest, Alaska, and JetBlue, announced that they were making masks optional. Mm-hmm. The Biden administration appealed the ruling on Wednesday, so we'll see how all of this shakes out. Let's listen now to Dr. Abrar Karan, who's an infectious disease doctor from Stanford University. He was on Zerlina Maxwell's show on Thursday. Let's go to the tape.
I mean, this is the worst time that you'd pull back on mitigation measures such as mask mandates in these very crowded places where people are moving around for transportation. They can't avoid it, right? People need to be on buses and trains to get to work. And then on top of that, they're going to different places. So they're spread. If they do get infected in these tight packed compartments, they're going to different parts of the state, different parts of the country, and potentially could be spreading and seeding new outbreaks. So this is not the time that you pull back on mitigation. This is the time where you wait and watch and see what happens, just as the CDC wanted us to do.
Oh, Maria. I saw a really great tweet, and I wish I could remember who it was from. But basically, it was like, you know, pandemics cannot end by court order.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we are so consumed with this ending that we are just determined to keep it going forever and definitely. And I think that's what this ruling does.
So I have my own horror stories.
Yeah, tell me. So you were flying recently.
So the mask mandate comes down on Monday, and I'm flying back on Wednesday from Tucson, Arizona, where, as it is, most people are not wearing masks in Tucson. I mean, it's, first of all, in the airport, less than half the people wearing masks. But then on the plane from Tucson to Denver, less than half the people wearing masks, maybe just under half, but most surprisingly, Jamila, the pilots were not wearing masks. And flight attendants, as they're serving the drinks, and I'm just freaking out in my own row. The men sitting next to me, both white men over 60, were not wearing masks. And then on the plane ride from Denver to New York, the first class flight attendant was wearing a mask, and people in my row were wearing masks, but it was really kind of catch as catch can. But I went up to the flight attendant, who was the only one who was wearing a mask. Everybody else, all the other attendants, were serving without masks. I'm freaking out here. I'm like, what is going on? And I said to the flight attendant, I said, thank you, sir, for wearing your mask. And he said, this was a legal ruling. It was not a scientific ruling. I am wearing my mask, I said, but the cat is out of the bag. There is no way to put this back in the bag. And then I said, what about your colleagues, the flight attendants and pilots who are not wearing masks? He said, they're sick of them. And he said, I'm sick of them too, but I don't want to get sick. And then I said, does that mean that they're Trumpy? And he was like, no, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're Trumpy. They're just sick of it. Mm-hmm. It's like the Wild West, in the sense of, we went back 2 years ago, which it's like, You don't know what's going on out there. You don't know what to expect. Your life is in your own hands. Everybody is acting however they want, selfishly or not. You know, and the people who have no choice, like this flight attendant who is wearing his mask, will be exposed to his own colleagues and to a plane full of people who don't want to wear a mask anymore.
Right. I thought that by this point in the pandemic, we'd learn that individual actions cannot take the place of sort of collective action when it comes to trying to stop this pandemic, right? And it's sad to see because obviously there's so many immunocompromised people. There's so many folks who are living with long COVID, and we're just kind of throwing our hands up and being like, well, you know what? Still get on the plane, go to work, go to school, go to conferences, go to Coachella, right? Like, and it's a lot. It's sad because I don't think that we're going to end this pandemic anytime soon, Maria.
You know, I read in the New York Times today and they were kind of like, there has to be some kind of happy medium. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is the fact that so many Americans have gotten COVID now because of Omicron, because of Delta, because of the variants, that we just have to accept this and live with it. And that's, I think, the big part of the conversation. But the plane thing has me totally freaked out, I got to tell you.
Well, to freak you out even more, let's move on to our second topic. And our second topic is Title 42. So as we get closer to the CDC's date for lifting Title 42, which is a Trump-era public health order that expels migrants from the U.S., a number of Democratic governors, senators, and candidates, many of whom are up for re-election or election in the midterms, have come out against the Biden administration's actions, with some calling for a delay in ending the policy. But as immigration reporter Felipe de la Hoz tweeted this week, Title 42 is a public health order. It isn't something that can or should be used for border control. Repealing Title 42 would just revert the immigration system back to what it has been and was for the first 3 years of the Trump presidency and before. So this is a total failure of the media to help people understand immigration law and policy. But yeah, in Texas, Democrat Beto O'Rourke, our favorite guy, who's running for governor in Texas, he was asked about Title 42 on MSNBC's Jonathan Capehart show on Sunday. Let's go to the tape.
No, I think it's time to end Title 42. Okay. I don't think we should have ever implemented it. It's a very cynical reading of U.S. law that, again, has done nothing to improve public health or safety. And when I listen to Border Patrol agents who are patrolling on the border, they tell me it actually increases the number of migrant crossing attempts. It creates more chaos because, Jonathan, as you know, those agents are forced to turn away those migrants and asylum seekers without processing them, detaining them, or allowing them to apply for asylum. So they're crossing again and again, maybe every single day of the week. The challenge, though, I think for the Biden administration is to make sure that we have the capacity in our border communities to process those who will now be able to lawfully claim or seek to claim asylum in this country. When you listen to the mayors and sheriffs in communities like Del Rio, Texas, they don't have the capacity to handle this right now, and they haven't yet heard a plan from the Biden administration. I know that that administration can come up with something, but they need to communicate it to these border communities. But Jonathan, yes, it's time to end Title 42. Let's just make sure that we're doing it responsibly and that we're doing it in partnership with the border communities who will bear the brunt of any policy changes coming from Washington, D.C.
So, Maria, the pandemic is over when it comes to people wearing masks on planes, but not Title 42 when it comes to migrants seeking asylum.
I.e., if you are black and brown, you definitely have COVID. And if you weren't born in the United States, you're definitely bringing COVID along with you. It's just so completely random and ridiculous. So I was on MSNBC that morning right after Beto O'Rourke. And I was listening to what he was saying. And I was like, this is what everybody's concerned with, right? That it is, yet again, migrants and refugees thrown under the bus by everybody, Democrats and Republicans, as some political tool for their own purposes. The way that Beto O'Rourke couched this, I mean, he is right in the sense that the Biden administration, I mean, hello, they have had all of this time to kind of prepare. At some point, they knew this was going to happen. And so they should have a thorough plan. So the question to the Biden administration is a correct one. But the thing is that you can tell the way that O'Rourke was using it, that it was very much in a kind of political way. Listen, Jamila, as you know, I just was on the Arizona-Sonora-Mexico desert border.
Right.
I was seeing people. It's not a deportation when you're returned because of Title 42. That's important for people to understand. Hmm. If you are deported, you are put through the system. You are put in a detention camp or at least held, you know, this and that. Title 42, when the Border Patrol engages you, which, by the way, where I was, it's most people who are about to die. And so they have no choice but to ask for the Border Patrol to help them.
Hmm.
The Border Patrol would then simply drop you at the border. I think they fingerprint you and they drop you at the border. And there you go. And that's why the same people are attempting to cross more times.
Hmm.
If you're deported, every time you cross, it becomes more dangerous because then they'll put you in prison. But Title 42, you're returned multiple times, you can keep on trying. And so people are trying over and over again. And essentially, it creates a situation that puts people, as I was seeing, in more and more danger in the desert or in these little towns where they are now.
Right.
Held by traffickers. It's very dangerous. I'm just chock full of all of this stuff because I literally have been seeing how ridiculous this policy is. The people in the community say two things. One, this policy is cynical because everybody knows that COVID is not being brought by migrants any more than it's being brought by all of the tourists who are flying into New York City and Chicago and Denver and Miami and LA, you know, now maskless. So don't even start with that. Mm. But also the activists on the ground are saying to the Biden administration, we're ready. Don't come at us like this is an uncontrollable tens of thousands of people and we don't know. Jamila, people who are coming have people who are waiting for them. They have places to go. They have people who care for them. They're their family members. And even if they were people who had no roots, they are overwhelmingly refugees. Can we just get our history straight here? And I know which side of the history we're on. So
it's important, yeah. Right? Because we know kind of where the Biden administration's position on this is somewhat clear based on what Kamala Harris said in 2021, which was do not come, right? So there's no system and it's a system that's deeply, deeply broken.
Hi, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA. We all love great stories, and great stories are what we pride ourselves in delivering to you every week. Latino USA presents a mix of reporting on culture and politics, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues, featuring stories from the heart, stories that will make you think and maybe even inspire you. Listen to Latino USA on your favorite podcast app from PRX. All right, we're going to move on to our final topic. I'm sorry, y'all. We are going to have some fun for you at the end, okay? This is just the days are upon us because our final topic is about Melissa Lucio. She's the first Latina woman to be put on death row in Texas. Melissa Lucio, who is 53 now, was convicted of capital murder in 2008 for the death of her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah. She is set to be executed on April 27th. That is on Wednesday of next week. Family and advocates are arguing that she was wrongfully convicted and that Mariah died in her sleep 2 days after an accidental fall down the stairs. Prosecutors argued that Lucio had abused her daughter, but Lucio, her family, and her attorneys have maintained her innocence, saying her confession was coerced. It was also videotaped, so you know you can see it. Some jurors from the original trial have also now called for a retrial. That's important. And also important, they have expressed regret for voting to convict her. Kind of like they didn't have all the information. They needed context. So Vanessa Potkin is director of special litigation at the Innocence Project. She's one of Melissa Lucio's attorneys. And she spoke about the police interrogation of Lucio on Democracy Now! On Wednesday. Let's go to the tape.
Within 2 hours of her daughter's death, police had her in an interrogation room. They started berating her, telling her that she had to have done this. She must have been responsible for her child's death, showing her pictures of her daughter, threatening her, saying she wasn't going to go to her daughter's funeral unless she told them what they wanted to hear. Over 100 times, Ms. Lucio asserted her innocence, and police ignored it. They interrupted her. They stopped her. They told her it wasn't true. And the clear implication was, this interrogation is not going to stop until you tell us what we want to hear. She endured that type of aggressive, coercive, manipulative questioning for over 5 hours. before ultimately she falsely took responsibility for some of her daughter's injuries. And then this was used against her at trial as a confession.
So the case is complicated. And by the way, Reynaldo Leaños Jr. did a really great piece of reporting on Latino USA. You can listen to that. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a great documentary that really brought this story to the forefront. Whatever it is, she did not get a fair trial.
Right.
I mean, just this from the New York Times, the district attorney who prosecuted Melissa Lucio, his name is Armando Villalobos, listen to this, is serving a 13-year sentence for corruption. It's unrelated to her case, but the guy is in prison himself, the district attorney who prosecuted her. And so you cannot put someone to death, you know, where you now have jurors saying these kinds of things. And again, where you have such a prosecutorial problematic trial from, you know, start to finish. But, you know, knowing Governor Abbott from Texas, I'm not sure that I see him stopping this, honestly.
And, you know, it's especially awful when more and more details of the investigation itself come out. So this is from The Intercept, from Liliana Segura and Jordan Smith. Cops showed Lucio graphic pictures of her daughter and then fed her suggestions about what might have caused her injuries. And this was just hours after her death, right, Maria? So I can't imagine what it's like to lose your child, to be in shock, and then to be investigated, to be interrogated by police and, you know, being shown pictures of your dead child, yeah. Right? Like this is, it's truly awful. And this, you know, this is not a unique story. A lot of cases of child deaths, especially, are often, you know, criminally prosecuted. And in some cases, that's very important, obviously. But if you're not white, you don't get the benefit of the doubt, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is just a heartbreaking story. And you know, I hope it gets the attention it deserves.
And let me tell you, because I deal a lot with the Texas Department of Corrections and having just covered Texas for a long time as a national reporter, the legal justice system in Texas, from what I have heard from people who are behind bars, if you are brown or poor, if you are white and poor, black and poor, brown and poor, good luck to you. The book will be thrown at you. And the options for you to appeal are so limited and based on whether or not you have money. Mm. I'm horrified by this story. I'm really horrified. I'm glad we're talking about it. And I think people should get informed. This is one of the reasons why people have a real problem with the death sentence, because it is the state killing people and you can't take that back.
Right.
So, Jamila, this is like intense, but I know, dear listener, I know that you're appreciative that we talk about this because we need to be informed. This is what democracy looks like. But I want to lighten it up a little bit. So, Jamila, it's so good to have you on the show. I want to ask you, so something that has nothing to do with all of these difficult topics that we just went through that you've been thinking about that makes you, I don't know, smile,
yeah,
feel silly. What?
So I watch the Kardashians.
Are you kidding me?
Their new Hulu show has premiered recently.
I don't know how I feel about this.
But here's the thing. So the Kardashians are in court right now fighting a legal case against Blac Chyna. Blac Chyna, of course, is Rob Kardashian's former partner. She's a Black woman from D.C. So she's basically alleging that the Kardashians, after they broke up, conspired to wreck her reality TV show career, which was supposed to be the launching pad for all this stuff. And I think what's really at stake is, like, you're going to get a lot of behind-the-scenes details around how this whole industry works. But beyond that, you know, like, for a family that has profited so much off of Black culture and Black people, for them not to be Black and to be held to account and having to go to court and being brought to court by a Black woman, I think is interesting at the very least. So That's what I'm watching carefully. But, you know, I'm also keeping up with the Kardashians. So one way or another, I'll be keeping up.
Oh, my God, Jamila, you continue to surprise me because I am one of those people. I have never watched not one episode, not one trailer, not 1 minute. And yet people have told me that it is a great show to watch. And I'm just very afraid to dip my toe into that. But instead, I'll tell you what I have been watching, which is Bridgerton.
Oh, yeah. Second season's out.
The second season is out. And I'm kind of hate watching it because it's actually, I'm not sure if it's good. I mean, the production is great. I think they're trying to create this real sensual drama between two actors that actually don't necessarily have it. They're really working hard to try to create the sparks. And I'm kind of hate watching it because it's not real. You know, we did not have a black woman queen of England. I kind of wish it was more honest because there were people from India. There were black people there. Mm-hmm. There were all sorts of people there. And they were, in fact, having a lot of sex with all kinds of other people, forced or unforced. So I'd like a little bit more honesty instead of kind of this racial harmony kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it serves its purpose, which is to disconnect me. And it's been so good connecting with you. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Jamila King. Uno, dos,
tres. Remember, dear listener, to go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us, because where else will you get a dissertation on keeping up with the Kardashians and Bridgerton at the same time, as well as getting informed? Remember, also, you can listen to In the Thick on all major podcast platforms. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. And also, be sure to follow and support Jamila's work at BuzzFeed News. And I happen to find all her social media feeds just super interesting. Plus the puppies. We got to get the puppies together.
Yep. The animals, man.
Lifesavers. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saudi, Harsha Nahata, Lisa Salinas, and our fellow Sarah Hershander, with editorial support from Charlotte Mangin. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. Dear listener, thank you so much for listening. Remember, no te vayas. We'll see you on our next episode. Jamila, besitos. See you later.
Stay safe, y'all.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees. From P.